for great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to hour number two. There are just five sleeps to go before Australian voters in the most populated state, New South Wales, go to the polls. Five sleeps. And for those listeners keen to follow this election, which is a crucial one in the context of Australian politics, we'll talk about the race with Alan Jones shortly, then One Nation's Mark Latham on Thursday, and I'll have a couple of major party legends on the program on Friday for a little bit of a duel. Labor and Liberal go head to head. So you won't go without the latest and the issues, of course, that matter. As for the race itself between New South Wales Premier Dominic Perrottet and his Labor opponent, Chris Minns, the Herald today reported that the Premier had clawed back ground in the final days before Saturday's election. But New South Wales Labor is still favoured to win government with the support of key crossbenchers. And look, that is the way that most of the pundits have predicted this from the start of the election campaign. So the contest has tightened. The Resolve group, doing the work for the Herald, has been out crunching opinion, and the coalition's primary vote has jumped 6 points to 38%, which is rather significant. Labor's primary remains unchanged on 38%. So it's 38 neck and neck. It's remained unchanged for Labor because Chris Minns has been playing a terribly small target and done very little on policy that we haven't already heard. So Perrottet has edged further ahead, and he's edged further ahead in the preferred premier stakes as well, securing his highest rating since taking over as leader, 40%, while Labor leader Chris Minns is steady on 34. Now, those numbers never mean too much. Ignore them. It's the data that extrapolates from all voter intentions that counts. Even the primary vote of 38 doesn't mean a thing. And the overall voting numbers indicate a 4.5% swing, and Labor is on track to return to power for the first time in 12 years. And it's 12 years that I think is one of the key factors. And they'll probably need the backing of crossbench MPs to form government, but they'll get that. So the miners, depending on the final numbers, could basically run the government of New South Wales, which is just what the people of New South Wales do not need. And as I've been saying in recent years, the Liberal Party is suffering from not representing their members anymore, not remaining truly conservative and leaning constantly left and green. How many federal parties, conservative parties, are doing the same thing? We spoke with Katie Hopkins about Rishi Sunak doing the same thing in Britain. The Liberal Party's social media channels have turned, this is quite amazing, have turned shades of teal in their newest posts, encouraging voters to, quote, just vote one Liberal. The Herald discovered this overnight. They've literally turned teal. It's the first time the lighter colours, which are associated with the fake teal independence in New South Wales, it's the first time these lighter colours have made an appearance on their social feeds, which is, you know, usually the light and dark Liberal blue. That does not happen by accident. It's an intentional thing. So just like the Teals, who are the Greens in Gucci, as I say, are constantly trying to look conservative to steal votes from those who would normally vote for the Liberal Party, the Liberal Party is now doing the same in reverse. What a weird tactic this is, but it must be deliberate because you don't change the party's colours on large social media accounts without designing it to be that way. And you have to wonder who's in government here. It is quite odd. It looks like the Libs are chasing the Teals when it should be the other way around. The Liberals are in government. They shouldn't be looking over their shoulder, but they are. And maybe some of their internal survey data in recent weeks is showing widespread support for the Teals. It could be the case. You know, that's what a decision like this usually is all about. But this teal-looking banner is basically encouraging voters to avoid marking their preferences. It just says, just vote one Liberals in those teal colours. Just vote one. So the how to vote cards calling on voters to number every box, maybe they're being ignored now. Maybe there's a shift away from that strategy. It appears to be part of a broader campaign to discourage voters from making further preferences on their ballots. But just on these fake independents, the Teals, it never ceases to amaze me who their major backer, Climate 200, is prepared to accept as a donor. They don't give a damn. The Teals have always had a conflicted relationship, of course, with fossil fuels. It's the antithesis of Climate 200. But listen to this. The very wealthy who fund, vote for, and even run as Teals tend to have a few awkwardly financially beneficial relationships with coal and oil themselves. And the latest example emerged today. Climate 200 has received two donations worth $3,300 each from a group called Keep the Monist Proprietary Limited. Now, that company is registered to a $13 million Darling Point residence. It's owned by Fred Woollard, who's the founder of Samuel Terry Asset Management, which is a boutique fund with significant investments in Horizon Oil and US-based diamond offshore drilling. Woollard's been donating to Climate 200 leading up to the last federal election as well, and he's done it again for the state election. Now, the Greens received some of Woollard's riches, a $7,000 donation. What did they do? The money was returned to him because of his connection to big oil. You've got to at least give them brownie points for doing that. But not Climate 200. Oh, no. Not Simon Holmes at court. Not Malcolm Turnbull. Not those. That mob. They say they hate fossil fuels, but are only too happy to take money from those who have built the fossil fuel industry. What gross hypocrisy. Does that surprise you about Simon Holmes at court and Malcolm Turnbull? Gross hypocrisy. But whenever their members turn up in the media, mainly on the ABC, this isn't raised. They never have to answer questions about this, do they? The ABC doesn't take them for all they're worth. Oh, no. They give them free rein, which is why they turn up on the ABC over and over again. The Teals are on the right side of the mainstream media's politics, and therefore they get a rails run. That is the truth. That is the truth. And it's pathetic. This is TNT Radio.
Chris Smith and Alan Jones on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, I'm joined each and every Thursday. We're very lucky to have him here. And I know from the emails and also my social media feedback that you are excited to hear him on this station. You're excited to hear him on a radio network again. He is a legend of Australian broadcasting. He is Alan Jones. You can watch him Monday through Thursday on Facebook or YouTube on adh.tv, adh.tv. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, sir.
They're still pushing you to do Monday to Thursday on adh.tv. You're still a workaholic, aren't you?
Oh, well, I enjoy it. I mean, the most important muscle in your body, Chris, is your brain, and you've got to keep your brain going, and many people don't do that. I'm totally opposed to early retirement, and you see many of these people are victims of early retirement because then they think, well, what am I going to do? So I'll most probably die on the job, but I love what I do, and I think the opportunity to share ideas with people is important, and along the way we might sort of help educate them a little as well.
And people appreciate that. Did you survive the unseasonably hot weather in Sydney over the weekend, or were you elsewhere?
I spent a lot of my time in the Alan Jones stand. The Alan Jones stand is the lounge room in front of the TV with my tracksuit on. And fortunately, it's air conditioned, so outside they're doing their own thing. But I have to say, I do go in the mornings for a walk, and my God, at 7:15, it was still ridiculous temperatures. And I saw they played that rugby league match yesterday in Canberra, and it was 35 degrees. That was at, 6 o'clock at night or something. So, yeah, it's been very hot. But look, you can't complain about the weather. People go whinge and carry on. We do pretty well.
Yeah, very, very true. All right, down to business. This came through about 2.5 hours ago, and I looked at it and I tut-tutted because quite often they put too much pressure on our veterans, and they like to sift through things that veterans face in the heat of battle, which I think is unfair. But a decorated Australian SAS veteran has been arrested near Jindabyne and is due to be charged with murdering an Afghan man on the field of war. And I understand from a message you sent to me a little earlier today that this man, who was awarded the Commendation for Gallantry for his service in Afghanistan, would be the first Australian Defence Force member to be charged for a war crime. Oliver Schultz, 41. He is the man that's been arrested. You know him.
Yes, I haven't met Oliver. I've had a lot of conversations. This is another disgrace. And I understand from the wife that the home's been raided by the federal police. I honestly, none of us know what this is about. This is the Brereton Report. This was a war. This was in Afghanistan. In wars, they kill people. How are we going to get young people, and they're not getting them, to sign up for service when then you come home and you're treated? See, he's been arrested today, but these people have been, their life has been made miserable for the last, you know, 15, 18 months. They've been hunted down. There were anonymous suggestions that Oliver was under scrutiny and all the rest of it. They shifted home. There were lots of questions they asked. They didn't get answers to them. And now the bloke's been arrested, and I don't know where the evidence has come from, and nor does the family. And the public are entitled to know. This whole Brereton report, based on all sorts of allegations, rumours, and a couple of books written by people whose names aren't worth repeating. But what it means is that our people, we send them to war, and now we bring them home and we charge them for what they did in war, where you do actually shoot and kill people. Now, if we're going to decide, if we're going to have courts in Australia to decide when we send our men into battle, they volunteer for that and they're sent in, they do what the government directs them to do, go to Afghanistan. When we go there and then do their job, and then when they come home, they're treated in this way. I don't know how you determine which person they're meant to shoot, which person they're not meant to shoot, because at the end of the day, none of these people in fancy suits and, you know, beautiful ties and dressed brilliantly and expensively at home have never been in the field of war, never been into battle. But we send them into battle, and now we're going to determine when it's a criminal offence to shoot one as opposed to another. And you've just got to think of the family of Oliver Schultz and Lara Schultz, the wife. Their life is absolutely, and has been for months, miserable. And all they did was to accept the direction of their government to go into war. Now they're going to say the wife's husband is a criminal. That's basically what they're saying. Well, if that's the case, I don't know any young person who'd sign up knowing that there's a risk of him being treated this way when he comes home.
Not a chance, not a chance. And the public, as we've seen through this period since the Brereton Inquiry had an investigative body, the public will give the benefit of the doubt to the soldier, to the veteran, each and every time. Now, the other dreadful breaking news, while we're talking about breaking news, the rugby league world is in mourning, especially those who are associated with the South Sydney Rabbitohs. The great former captain John Sattler has passed away aged 80. Alan, I know you had a lot to do with him in the last few decades, some fundraising. And he was one of the most incredible athletes of his time.
Yes. Well, most people know I coach South Sydney, and Sats is a great man and a great family, and he'll always be remembered of playing that grand final with a broken jaw. Just a thorough and utter gentleman. And, you know, the rugby league world, we're all saddened, but I suppose in many ways these things are inevitable. We have to face the mortality of us all. But when it happens to people that we know and respect and love, who gave distinction and credibility to a wonderful club, South Sydney, then those people will never be forgotten. And I have a saying that no one really ever dies until the memories fade away, and the memories of John Sattler and the contribution he made to South Sydney will never be forgotten.
Yeah, he was born in Curry Curry, played 197 games for South Sydney between 1963 and 72. And as a young bloke watching South, he was my hero, Sats. And I was able to meet him when I was much older and worked for the club, and it was a pleasure. I've got to take just a quick break, 60 seconds. I'll be back with you to talk Donald Trump and the election in New South Wales. Alan Jones after this.
Politically Incorrect on TNT Radio.
Dr. Judy Wileyman, she's been observing, and there are others now making the same statements, that the cumulative buildup of vaccines or injections or whatever are causing untold damage. The continuation of jabbing everyone is not the way to go.
When we're told about vaccines, they have aluminium in them, they have mercury in them, which is accumulative in the brain. The aluminium will also push down your fighter cells, your lymphocytes, leukocytes, macrophages, monocytes, and it will ramp up your cytokine response, that temperature, that fluid that comes. Now, the other thing, this goes back a long time. We're talking about eugenics never ended, and we've seen meetings here at University College London, and those that are in government have links to eugenics. And we look at what's actually come. You had Hermann Pichon, who worked for the Third Reich, who was looking at how radiation affected blood and water. Now we have glyphosate, which has absolutely saturated our water table. Now you put aluminium with glyphosate, you're going to get 6 new compounds in the gut. You bring in fluoride, and now you've got another weapon.
Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Laurie from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
If you want the jibby jab, all right, enough. Then you've come to the wrong station. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I've got Alan Jones with me at the moment. Okay, Donald Trump is now saying, Alan, that he will be arrested and charged on Tuesday of this week for the allegations concerning hush money paid to porn actor Stormy Daniels. This is 7 years ago. It's so old. He's daring them to do it, I think. It's hard to fathom how such a misdemeanor, as many of the experts are referring to it today as, would ever bring down a former president.
Well, it's quite unbelievable. You wonder where all this is going to end, mind you. They've tried everything. They tried his tax returns. They found nothing. They raided his home at Mar-a-Lago, allegedly holding documents. They found nothing. They tried to incriminate him in relation to January 6, and they found nothing. And now this. So they're not giving up. This bloke is a sort of a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, and he seeks to make the charge, and Trump, I think, has got in first. This stuff's got to end somewhere, because if they think this is the way America is going to go, then they need to think again. Trump has a rusted-on level of support amongst Republicans of at least 30%, and if he chooses to stand, then he will certainly get the Republican nomination, simply because if they don't choose him, he's likely to run as independent, which would split the Republican vote and open the way for the Democrats to retain the presidency. So that's not something the Republicans are likely to do. But this has just gone beyond everything, basically, charging a former president over an incident which occurred years ago, which, as you say, is relatively trivial. He's denied that he had any relationship with this woman, but they've obviously got some information somewhere. Whether it can form the basis of criminal charges, who knows? But I think America generally, even Trump's enemies, have now argued that this is trivializing what ought to be a sensible approach towards any kind of offense, whether it be criminal or otherwise. Yeah. And Donald Trump, I think, is a wake up to all of this. And this will just galvanize support for Trump. If they think this stuff is going to sort of bury Trump, it just galvanizes support for him.
Yep. It'll rebound straight back in their faces. Now, the Australian election in the state of New South Wales this Saturday, the Premier of New South Wales is, I think, drawing his own party, the Liberals, closer to the Labor opposition. I think we spoke about that 2 weeks ago. And all roads lead to a Labor victory. Hard to tell them much apart at the moment. And the sense I'm getting is that people have had enough of the Liberal Party, think it's time, think 12 years is enough. But beyond that, they think that Matt Keane is the ultimate conspirator inside the party, and they don't trust him.
That's absolutely right. Look, I can tell your audience without equivocation that Perrottet can't win the election. Keane is damaging the Liberal brand. As someone who worked for a Liberal Prime Minister who's supported the Liberal Party and who's raised money for the Liberal Party, I'm ashamed that Perrottet is the Liberal leader. The Liberal Party stands for smaller government and lower taxes, for certain freedoms and so on. This was a government that denied all those freedoms to people during coronavirus, and now we'll still not, in some parts of the bureaucracy, employ people who aren't vaccinated. So the whole freedom argument goes out the door. He introduced a budget last year where the growth in expenditure, there was a $27 billion splurge, the growth in expenditure, growth, was 26.5%. Now, when Whitlam was Prime Minister in 1974 and increased expenditure, the growth of 24.9%, they called him an economic vandal. They said it would be a record that was never be broken. Well, it's been broken by an alleged Liberal. You can't call them Liberals. Alleged Liberal. $27 billion, growth of 26.5%. Now, he's gone into an election campaign, and if you read anything about Perrottet anywhere, he's throwing money at everyone. And yet he stood in a campaign launch and said, think of your kids. Well, yes, Dominic Perrottet, I'm thinking of the kids, and that's why I think you are a disgrace, because you're saddling the kids of tomorrow with unconscionable levels of debt. These promises so far total about $38 billion on top of the debt that was amassed, the $27 billion in the last budget. This is unbelievable. Then he says, oh, we're not going to raise taxes. You're kidding me. Who is going to pay for this debt? Then, of course, the children. He says, if you're thinking of the children, well, are these the children in Western Sydney who are locked out of school? Are these the children who are indoctrinated rather than educated, and in the curriculum you're doing nothing about it? Are these the children who in Western Sydney know that there is not a satisfactory police presence to keep the community safe? I mean, these people are just unadulterated liars. And the public out there, I think, have had a gutful of it. Now, you don't have, no use arguing about the other bloke, what's his name, Minns, no use arguing about him. These people have been here for 12 years. You now find that nurses are residing en masse. Today, we've got another ferry which is broken down. You've got no bus drivers in Western Sydney, so kids are being denied the opportunity of getting to a swimming lesson or a swimming class or getting to school. You've got people in emergency departments. In 3 months, 62,000 people walked out of emergency departments because they couldn't get treated within an hour. I mean, I could go on forever about this. And these are people who say, elect me, vote for me again. You are kidding. And their energy policy is parallel to the destructive policies of Chris Bowen. Then Perrottet lined up with Albanese without any discussion with anyone, not with his party, not with his cabinet, and said, we will back the voice. We will support the voice. Who's we? No discussion whatsoever. You've got the Environment Minister, who's the member for Manly, this fellow Griffin, only a week ago, stood there and said, everybody, I don't know who everybody is, everybody wants coal and gas out of the energy equation immediately. And Perrottet's nodding agreement behind him. Are you kidding me? Everybody wants coal and gas. There's no way we can power the economy with renewable energy. There's no way we can rely on the weather, wind and sun, to generate the energy that's needed. And here is the ostensible leader, a Liberal leader, saying we're going to get rid of coal and gas when they're getting $11 billion of coal royalties every year. No one's saying how that money's going to be replaced. Look, it is absolutely sickening. If Bill Hayden was here, he'd say, vote for the drover's dog rather than this lot.
He's so off the ball, and he'll see that when the voice is kicked out and the referendum doesn't succeed, and we'll soon realise how off the ball he was. Just very quickly, National Rugby League, because we can talk about footy if we want to. Should a nation like Papua New Guinea or an old discard such as the Great North Sydney Bears teaming up with Perth be the next team included in the Australian competition?
Well, we do have a New Zealand team. That's a very interesting question you ask, because it's supposed to be Australian Rugby League competition.
Yeah.
And we've got a New Zealand team in the competition. Papua New Guinea, no, because the only way that could be competitive would be to have a whole heap of Australian players migrate to strengthen the side. North Sydney, yes. I think there's history and tradition behind North Sydney, and I think they've done enough. They've stayed intact as a club ever since they were thrown out, and I think that it's worth seeing whether that is viable. On the other hand, there is an awful lot of money in Queensland for another club up there. I mean, the Dolphins have proved the myth that, you know, you've got a, Bennett had to get a marquee player and he didn't get a marquee player, and they're 2-1 on to finish with the wooden spoon. Now they're the top of the table and there's the big clash. This will be phenomenal at the weekend, won't it?
Won't it?
The Dolphins versus the Broncos. Benny going back to his old home, and there's a lot of scores to be settled there. This will be a hell of a clash. But I think, you know, and Benny would say, well, I haven't got a marquee player. I've got 13 of them. I'm making marquee players. And that's what he's doing. They've had three big wins. So to answer your question, I don't think Papua New Guinea, much as I'd love to see them appropriately represented, I think they're quite good for sevens competitions and so on. But I do think North Sydney have earned the right to be considered, whether they can beat the competition that will come from Queensland. The NRL, as you know, Chris, are trying to say that we want to do what the Australian rules do and have a sort of a national representation, people in Perth and people in Adelaide. That's all very well. But I'll tell you what, that's a very, very expensive business. When you start having a rugby league side having to go to Perth, fly to Perth, be accommodated in Perth and come back from Perth, the cost of that kind of competition is exorbitant, and that's why rugby went broke. I mean, they wanted to pretend they have all these teams everywhere in South Africa and in Argentina. Well, by the time you pay accommodation and airfares, there's nothing left. So I think the rugby league ought to recognise that the basis of its competition that it's got now is very good. North Sydney or a Queensland side fit into that, but the notion of going beyond that, I think, is not a financial opportunity that should be taken.
Who's going to win between the Dolphins and the Broncos? Kafusi's out for the Dolphins.
I think, yeah. What? Who's out?
Kafusi.
What did you say?
Kafusi, the second rower, is out for the Dolphins.
Have they not? I didn't know that. But look, you know, the Broncos, Kevin Walters has done a good job there, and I think he deserves to. I just think the Dolphins, look, winning, I know the Broncos have won as well, but there's tremendous momentum with the Dolphins. I like their defence, and just as I thought Canberra's defence at the weekend was outstanding against Cronulla, I think the Dolphin defence, they've beaten two big sides, I think the Dolphin defence, and push turns to shove, there's no guarantee that Benny won't walk away a winner.
It'll be fantastic. Packed house at Suncorp as well. Mate, thank you very much.
Yeah.
All the very best.
You're welcome.
Watching ADH.TV tonight, mate. Thank you.
Okay, Good, see you next week. Bye-bye.
Okay, will do. Alan Jones, thank you so much for the emails that I've got on Alan being on the program. I'm so appreciative that he's found time for us as well, and we're very, very lucky that he returns to the airwaves. Lucy has sent me an email saying, I'm thrilled to have found you on this app. Good on you, says Lucy. Thank you, Lucy. Sometimes you can't keep a good man down. That's how they say it, isn't it? D-Man, I had to get onto Twitter on the weekend and listen to what D-Man wrote. And just in reference to farting cows, this is a beauty. On Twitter, D-Man wrote, the woke brigade and plant-based food army are now claiming that cows emit more pollution than cars. Well, if you believe that, I'll make a deal with you. You lock yourself in a garage with a running car overnight. I'll do the same with a cow, and we'll discuss it in the morning. Thank you, D-Man. That is an excellent. Let's not try that. I was about to say that's an excellent idea. No, let's not try that. Certainly don't try that at home. Now, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest that you would like to hear on TNT Radio, or perhaps you have a topic you want tackled? Then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
This news just in.
TNT Radio News.
Ready? Go! Go!
Matt Boylant here with your TNT headlines. The latest batch of Twitter files has revealed an academic group backed by the US government forced the social media site to censor factual information about COVID-19 to avoid fueling vaccine hesitancy. Everyone who owns a mobile phone in the UK will have their devices pinged by the government next month as Britain tests a new emergency warning system, and Washington's vowed to reject any proposal of a ceasefire in Ukraine that's put forward by Russia.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Well, Germany's Minister of Health, Karl Lauterbach, who once claimed that COVID-19 vaccination is free of side effects, that's what he said, has admitted that he was wrong, saying adverse reactions occur at a rate of 1 in 10,000 doses and can cause severe disabilities. Now, Steve Kirsch, who I've spoken to on this program, would disagree with that. He would say it's a lot worse than 1 in 10,000. But anyway, put that aside. In 2021, August 14, Lauterbach said on Twitter that the vaccines had no side effects, further questioning why some Germans refused to get vaccinated against COVID-19. Now, during that interview on ZDF's Heute Journal, I apologize for my German. I used to jig German class in year seven. In this interview, he said Lauterbach was asked by anchor Christian Sivers about the claim he made in the summer of 2021, confronting the health minister with his previous tweet that stated the shots are virtually free of side effects. Lauterbach responded that the tweet was misguided and an exaggeration he made at the time, noting that it did not represent my true position. Is he suggesting there? I would have loved to have sat and asked the questions in this interview. Hopefully he spoke English and said to him, hold on a second. Are you saying you were forced to say what you said in the summer of 2021? And who forced you to say that? Were they health authorities? Was this big pharma who'd convinced you in your office that these vaccines could be trusted? So he says that the tweet was misguided and an exaggeration, noting that it did not represent his true position. Wow. He said, I've always been aware of the numbers and they've remained relatively stable. 1 in 10,000 are injured, he said. Some say that's a lot and some say it's not so many. Lauterbach's remark on vaccine adverse events came after the German network played a segment of several Germans who'd been seriously injured after getting the shot, including a 17-year-old gymnast who previously competed in the German Artistic Gymnastics Championships before she was hospitalized for more than 1 year shortly after receiving the second dose of the BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine. And the question was put, what do you say to those who've suffered from vaccine injuries? And Lauterbach responded, what's happened to these people is absolutely dismaying, and every single case is one too many, he responded. I honestly feel very sorry for these people. There are severe disabilities and some of them will be permanent. Now, Steve Kirsch would say he's underestimating the number of people who have severe disabilities. Steve Kirsch would say it's closer to 1 in 1,000, not 1 in 10,000. But to have a health minister, and I haven't heard of a health minister anywhere who played a role in the management of COVID-19 during the pandemic, say that their comments during the pandemic were misguided, were an exaggeration, and did not represent my true position, does that mean the true position he has now, or the true position he had at the time, but he was telling porkies? Porky pie lies. Very interesting indeed. And Germans must be scratching their head. They certainly won't be getting more jabs after that interview. Defence Minister of Australia, Richard Marles, has left the door ajar for Australia's nuclear-powered submarines being sent to fight in a potential war over Taiwan. Of course, the questions have got to be asked, okay, you've got the submarines. If China goes into Taiwan, are you going to use the submarines against China? Well, it makes sense that you get the submarines to do a job, and that job would be the case. But if you're not going to have the nuclear-powered submarines with cruise missiles attached ready until the 2040s, well, China has already made it quite plain, publicly transparent, that they want to take and reunify Taiwan, in their words, before 2027. And if you consider what they did to Hong Kong, getting in about 30 years beforehand, well, you may even think that they could do it in 2024. So there are going to be no nuclear-powered submarines on a dock or a port in Australia to go into battle. Now, while Miles conceded that ultimately a decision to fight would be the responsibility of the government of the day, he unequivocally shut down speculation that Australia had made a commitment to back the US in the event of a Taiwan conflict. So he's leaving his options open here. He's not saying that Australia would follow the US in any kind of conflict with China over Taiwan, which is very, very interesting. Now, it comes as the Australian National University's Hugh White, an emeritus professor of strategic studies, lashed the AUKUS project as amounting to a promise to follow the US into a war against China, which is contained in a podcast aired yesterday. Australia has committed to pursue the acquisition of the vessels under that trilateral AUKUS security agreement. And Professor White, a former deputy secretary of the Defense Department, said Australia was not only going to hand over some serious dollars to the US, but also pay with a promise to enter any future conflict with China. Well, that's a truism, isn't it? I think every Australian would understand that if the US helps us with their own technology on nuclear-powered submarines and we build them, that they would be used in concert with any action in the Pacific. We kind of get that, don't we? Hugh, it's not a surprise. He says this is a very serious transformation of the nature of our alliance with the United States. No, it's not. It's not a serious transformation. Our nature with the United States has been that if they're in a particular theater of war, we are there with them too. That's always been the case. Every single theater of war, Australia has been with the United States. So this is no different, Hugh. He says the US don't really care about our submarine capability. They care deeply about tying Australia into their containment strategy against China. Well, the same applies in reverse. Australia would be very interested and keen to tie the United States into any containment strategy against China in Australia's backyard. Professor White said he couldn't see why the US would sell its own submarines, of which they have fewer than they need, unless it was absolutely sure Australia's submarines would be available to it in the event of a major conflict in Asia. He said a war between America and China over Taiwan would be World War III and have a good chance of being a nuclear conflict. Mr. Miles was hesitant to commit to joining the US in fighting China should they make good on their threat, reiterating the purpose of obtaining nuclear-powered submarines was to promote stability in the region. Yeah, that's interesting. That's just diplomacy and diplomatic speak, isn't it? Talking about China, Qantas has warned its pilots about very high frequency, that's VHF, interference from stations purporting to represent the People's Liberation Army in the South China Sea and Western Pacific, as well as GPS jamming allegedly originated from warships off the coast of Northwest Australia. In a notice published on March 16, the airline updated its flight standing orders manual to incorporate procedures for what to do if crews run into certain circumstances. The notice alerted pilots to hostile activities that flights had sometimes experienced in the Western Pacific and South China Sea. According to the release, interference on VHF was experienced by Qantas Group aircraft in the Western Pacific and South China Sea from stations allegedly representing the Chinese military. Now, the term very high frequency refers to radio waves that range in frequency from 30 to 300 megahertz and are utilized for various radio communications. In addition, the notification further said that Qantas aircraft have also encountered GPS jamming that is thought to have originated from warships operating off Australia's northwestern coast. Now, this is dangerous. This is dangerous. The Australian flag carrier, however, informed the pilots that there had been no safety events reported that relate to this activity. Well, not yet. Not yet. The updated guideline advised pilots to stay on course if they encountered unauthorized VHF communications or interference that claimed to be coming from the Chinese military. Should flight crew experience this interference, they should continue to track via their assigned clearance and report the interference to the controlling ATC authority. But this is dangerous. The international agency also advised pilots to report interferences to the controlling agency without reacting. How dare they do this to commercial flights that need to have unimpeded communications with control towers right throughout Asia? It is not on. I'm going to take a quick break now, and then after that, I'm going to tell you about a terrific story, and it involves an Australian company going into bed with the United States government over hypersonic missiles, exchange of great technology. We'll talk about that right after a break. Now, do you have an upcoming community event, maybe a rally, a march, festival or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? Well, TNT Radio wants to promote it for you, and simply visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website and submit your event details, and we'll get the word out only on TNT Radio.
Get ready to stink in order to save the climate.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The Biden administration is releasing new washing machine rules in the United States in order to combat global warming. Joe Biden's Energy Department proposed new energy efficiency standards for washing machines that would require, quote, new appliances use considerably less water, all in an effort to, quote, confront the global climate crisis. Add this to the proposed ban on gas stoves, ban on gas-powered cars, control of your thermostat through smart meters, regulating your dishwashers out of existence, energy shortages, blackouts, lab-grown meat forcing you to eat bugs, banning actual meat, issuing flying restrictions, forcing you to mass transit. You must sacrifice for the climate, all in an effort to confront the global climate crisis. Do you feel better now? This is no longer virtue signaling. This is virtue mandating, virtue coercion. We must reject the Great Reset. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
A bushfire tip from the New South Wales Rural Fire Service.
It's a fact that cars are a significant cause of bushfire. Parking in long dry grass means hot exhaust and hot brakes may start a fire. When travelling in bushland areas, remember to park in designated car parks or away from dry vegetation. And whatever you do, don't throw cigarette butts out the car window. Prevention of bushfires is your responsibility. Get FireWise. For more information, contact your local fire station.
Plug in.
Website.
TNTradio.live.
Check it out.
Today's News Talk Radio.
It's the coolest.
TNT.
All right, this is something you are likely to find surprising, but Australian aerospace company Hypersonics Launch Systems has been selected by the US Department of Defense to develop a high-speed aircraft that can test hypersonic technologies. The CEO of Hypersonics, David Waterhouse, is going to explain the ins and outs of how the development of this aircraft is taking place and what it will achieve shortly. But essentially, it will support a US Defense Innovation Unit program called Hypersonic and High Cadence Airborne Testing Capabilities, or HICAT, to help alleviate strain on government testing infrastructure. This is interesting. The military services are pursuing about 70 programs aimed at developing aircraft and weapons that can travel at hypersonic speeds or up to Mach 7, which is more than 8,600 kilometres an hour. Just cotton onto that for a second. More than 8,600 kilometres an hour. David Waterhouse is on the line. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Who are you up against when it came down to tenders for this job?
It was a closed tender process. We're not exactly sure who was out there, but it'd be the...
But you weren't alone.
Certainly not. 63 other people were bidding for the project, and we did well.
63 others, and you would presume it's from all around the world, and you were able to win. Did you expect to win the contract?
Well, we fancied our chances, but you never know. It's a good competitive process, but I think we demonstrated to the DIU that we are really world leaders in this technology. And again, we've got a great team. My co-founder, Michael Smart, worked at NASA for 10 years. He's done a lot of work at Queensland University with the hypersonics group there. And we've put together a great team of, you know, world-class technical guys and engineers and put the whole thing together.
So there's a hypersonics team at university in Queensland, and like no one would have known that. And they're there to learn techniques and experiments related to hypersonic speeds.
Yeah, so it goes back to Professor Ray Storker. This was 30-something years ago. He invented this hydraulic hypersonic shock tunnel and was running that out of the University of Queensland. And ever since then, you know, we've been world leaders in this tech. So it's been, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants. But Michael and the team have developed this great hydrogen power technology, and it's world beating.
So just rewind a little bit. In terms of hypersonic missiles, is it true that China, Russia, and the United States have them? China is a little bit more developed than the other two, and they're considered to be the be-all and the end-all if a significant war is underway.
Yeah, okay, two parts to that question. So first of all, yeah, China and Russia are probably ahead of you know, the US and the Western countries. And really, there's two sorts of hypersonic weapons. There's what we call boost glide, which basically launch you using a big rocket. They go up to about 120 kilometers in altitude, and they glide in. And there's the other ones we call air launch or hypersonic cruise missiles that sit under a plane. And they're launched from a fighter jet, sort of shorter range, but still the same sorts of speeds. So the Russians have been demonstrating that in the war in Ukraine. China demonstrated this boost glide rocket about 18 months ago, literally overflew Australia. And again, it was a bit of a wake-up call for the Western allies, because it hadn't been a technology that had been really prioritized by defense. Now they've realized that it is a really important technology, particularly in that it affects the ability of the carrier fleet to get in close, and because it can evade the anti-missile technology that's out there at the moment.
It can evade that technology because it's simply going too fast.
Well, it maneuvers at the high speeds. You know, normal rockets will travel at the same speed, but these travel at speed at a lower altitude and can maneuver like a plane. So, and that's kind of game-changing. The interesting thing about these missiles is they don't need to carry an explosive head. It's a kinetic weapon, and because of their mass and the velocity, they have a huge impact. So they're particularly designed for high-value targets, things like carriers, or I think in Ukraine, the Russians used it against the munitions dump. So it's, you know, it's game-changing technology.
Okay, so you are going to be part of building an aircraft that can fly faster than 8,000 kilometres an hour to monitor these missiles? Is that the way it works?
No, you can think of us, we've sort of got two roles in this. We're not a missile company. We're a deep tech company. So Michael has developed this hydrogen-powered scramjet engine, and that travels anywhere from Mach 5 to Mach 12. What we've got is we started off as a technology demonstrator, and really what the US, what DIU is interested in is as a hypersonic test platform. And there's really two roles for that. One is it's a platform for testing systems and materials at those speeds in real flight conditions. The other main role is it's a way of developing the detect and defend against systems. So think of it like a target drone. So the idea is we use our flyer, DART-AE, and we can use it for testing systems that have got to provide the guidance, navigation, that sort of thing at those speeds. And also what they'll be using is their radar, their satellite detection systems to see that they can track it and intercept it with some sort of defense system.
So when do these tests take place?
We've got our first launch coming up next year. And really, it's all about a system that was developed. The first application we understand, DARPA, which is again part of the US Department of Defense, has put a satellite network up there where they're trying to use that to detect these hypersonic missiles. So we'll be used as a means of testing that.
And have you given the test aircraft a name?
Oh, we're just calling it DART, DART-AE.
DART.
AE stands for additive engineering, because we 3D print most of the vehicle.
Oh, do you? Must be one hell of a 3D printer.
The flyer's only 3 meters long, so it's not huge. But these days, the 3D printers are getting bigger and bigger. The first one, we're not printing all in one piece. We're printing it in sections. But you can see that's the future of the manufacturing side of this. It's all, you know, one of the US has done a number of, you know, great development programs, mainly focused on air launch missiles, but they're beautiful, exquisite designs that take years to build. What we're trying to do is push towards the manufacturing so we can produce these things cheap, cheerful, reliable, and use that as a platform for what they call high cadence or very frequent testing. And that's a way of developing, you know, team hypersonics technology. So
if a country, let's get back to missiles for a second, just to give me an idea of the speed of this stuff, 8,600 kilometers an hour. How quick would that take to circumnavigate the globe?
Oh, well, I can say, I think Sydney to London takes about 1.5 hours, you know.
One and a half hours.
So you can see there will be eventually, you know, and again, we're the technology. We're, you know, you can think of scramjet engines anywhere you've got a jet engine. Eventually, we want to, you know, have a scramjet engine. It's a really fast, efficient way of using the atmosphere. Hydrogen powered, so no emissions, but it's hydrogen because hydrogen's a great fuel. It's a great way of traveling really, really fast.
Why? How?
It's very efficient. So the measure we use is something called ISP, and that's basically how efficient the fuel burns. And it's much better than burning kerosene or avgas, up to 5 times more efficient. And that means we can travel faster. Scramjet's got no moving parts inside. So instead of having to worry about turbine blades and compressors, what we do is we create a shockwave in there and feed the hydrogen in at these special points that the hydrogen ignites, and that gives us thrust. And that allows us to build up very high speeds. You have to get boosted to what we call Mach 5 first, so 5 times the speed of sound. And then after that, the scramjet takes over. So this is where you can think of, you know, Top Gun 2, Tom Cruise, you know, pushes it a bit too fast.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't let a pilot near us. But, yeah.
You can't have human beings on these things, can you?
Look, eventually you could. And again, because it's the acceleration, the thrust isn't such, you know, it's a constant buildup of speed, rather than, you know, throw the head back acceleration. Eventually, particularly for long range travel, there are real applications there.
So how does this work? Have you been awarded this tender by the US government and they give you a particular amount of money to build the aircraft? How does it work?
Yeah, so what's happening, it's the DIU, the Defense Innovation Unit, that sits under Heidi Shu. She's the Assistant Secretary of Defense in the US, and her team specializes in hypersonics and also other deep science. And what it is, it's a program over 2 years, and we're intending to build 3 flyers and launch those 3 flyers over those 2 years.
And they pay
we'll
for
use
that
as a base on. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And just say it blows out, will they pay for that too?
Yeah. I mean, it's part of this. Technology is not easy. And you know what it's like. Rockets are simple in comparison, but, you know. In all seriousness, I mean, what we're trying to do, we're a payload on a rocket. We use a rocket to get up to Mach 5. But that payload itself, we tried to keep it really simple, reliable test platform. Still very high performance, which is what they need for this program. And then if it's successful, more orders will follow.
That was my final question. If it's successful, more orders will follow. But in terms of the industry, the aerospace industry in Australia, it could lead to anything, couldn't it?
Yeah. Look, it's a great sector. It's one of those few technologies where, again, Australia really leads the world. You know, we'll be exporting the technology to the US, not the other way around. But if you look at, you know, AUKUS and that framework, Australia's got some really important things that can contribute to that program. For example, one of the things that we're interested in, so we're traveling Mach 7, we get about 1,000 kilometers of range out of a kilo of hydrogen. It's great having an overland test range, because that way you can recover the vehicle and you learn more about, you know, the technology, and it's a quicker way of developing a technology. Now, the US doesn't have anything like that. And so this would be a great opportunity for Australia to have that launch infrastructure that we can use for testing hypersonics, and that in turn provides capability for other launch applications as well.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, it's really quite an exciting time.
Yeah. who knows, it could lead to anything in terms of the Australian industry and Australian university courses, et cetera, et cetera. All the very best. Congratulations. No doubt you've had your own little mini celebration. Well done. We like an Aussie who punches well above their weight. You've done that. David, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks very much, Chris.
Good on you. David Waterhouse, Australian aerospace company, Hypersonics Launch Systems, in bed now with the US government, the Defense Department, to build this aircraft that will travel for testing purposes at 8,600 kilometres an hour. I can't even fathom that, can you? I cannot even fathom that. A story out of Queensland. Queensland school accreditation rules will undergo a review after a Christian college sent parents gender and sexuality contracts for students. Why do they want to get into this territory? Brisbane City Point Christian College made national headlines when it sent parents contracts demanding that families denounce homosexuality and that students identify by their birth gender or risk being excluded from the school. Look, I just think when it comes to all of that, isn't it a given that you're allowed in a Christian college to have your own views on this sort of stuff? You have a religion you follow, and so you shouldn't be told to be open to anything. You should be following your Christian beliefs and your religion. You don't need to sign contracts to determine whether you want to believe in that or not. I just don't get it. I've run out of time very quickly, in fact. Damian Richardson is up next. Do not go anywhere. I'll be back to do this at the same time tomorrow. Thank you, Malcolm. Great program, Chris. So good to hear AJ back on the airwaves. Well done. Good on you, Malcolm. Appreciate you listening and the rest of our listeners. We'll be back tomorrow. This is Chris Smith on TNT Radio.